We are holding on Mem Gimel Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday that we had talked about dinim about the turbits haveshed. We started talking about which in English the turbits haveshed is called the pharynx. It's like the immediate entry into the esophagus. We were talking about in the Mishnah. We said that if the esophagus itself has a hole, then the animal is safe. What about when it comes to this turbits haveshed? So Rav had said the same thing, b'mashahu, that a small hole is enough to make the animal chafe. Shmuel had said b'ruboy, only if most of it is, only if most of it has a hole. And we started describing the definition of turbits haveshed in terms of the type of tissue over there, and therefore what it does when it's cut. Basically, the idea is the esophagus itself, like we talked about before, is stretchy. So therefore, first the Gemara had said that if you cut it and it stays as is, then that means it's the actual esophagus. Whereas when it widens, then it means the turbits haveshed, because then it means, in other words, until now the muscles were under tension, and now when it's cut, then they're able to relax and widen. And then we said that no, actually, what it is that where it stays as is, that's the turbits haveshed, because that's not a stretchy type of tissue. So therefore, you cut it and it remains as is. When you cut it and it stretches open and it opens up and you can see more of the inside of it, that would be defined as the vesht. So then, in that connection, we mention that when it comes to now,
instead of being a full tear, is it if it's an internal tear without opening to the outside of the esophagus?
You're talking about as far as holes. Anytime we talk about a hole, basically we're talking about opening either to the outside or into the body cavity. Say, for example, when we learned in the Mishnah, we mentioned, for example, as far as the heart, if there's a hole in the heart, it would make the animal chafe. That means if there's a hole that goes all the way through the heart muscle, so that blood is going to leak out into the body cavity. If it was just a hole part way through, it wouldn't be a problem. And the same thing with these other things. Yeah, we talked about it. As far as the esophagus, for example, we talked about there are two layers of it. There's a muscular red layer on the outside, and then there's an inner mucosal layer on the inside, which is white. And only if both of those have a hole in them, it would be treif. We learned that it would be even if the two holes are not necessarily one right by the other, because as the esophagus stretches and shrinks, then they may end up coinciding. Actually, by the way, before we get...
A one-sided hole, whether inside or outside, that's partial, is it making the animal chafe or not?
No, so it wouldn't make the animal chafe unless it goes through both layers. The difference is that we're saying with the esophagus, unlike, for example, we said with the gizzard of a chicken, or with the gizzard of a bird, with the esophagus, though, the problem is because it stretches and shrinks all the time, then therefore... You can have times when even if there are holes in different places, in the inner layer in one place and in the outer layer in another, they may end up coinciding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, but here we were talking more about the turbits haveshed, which is the entryway into the esophagus, which is basically the pharynx. And we were talking about the definition of where it is. Before we get into that, by the way, actually, I forgot to mention, so yesterday when we were learning all about the esophagus and the two layers of it and all this fascinating thing in a mimer of the Friedrich Rebbe, and then the Rebbe himself has a mimer on it based on that, where they talk about the deeper meaning of all of this that we were learning about the esophagus and its two layers and about holes in it and so on and so forth. The idea being they explain the vesh, the esophagus, represents a person's power of bina. In other words, you know, you eat, the food goes down your esophagus and then eventually goes to get digested. The same way a person has this idea of being able to understand and not just to have a flash of an idea, but to be able to understand it and be able to internalize it. So we said also that, in fact, this point that the esophagus stretches and shrinks all the time is how it is with seichel. You always have. Sometimes your seichel expands, sometimes it shrinks, sometimes you're able to understand it better, sometimes less. So then the two layers of it represent, you have the inner aspect of bina, and then you have the outer, the outer one being, in other words, where eventually it affects midas and is also related to dinim, is also related to gvura particularly, which is why the outside layer is red. So then the inside points more to chachma, and therefore it's white representing achdus, White being the most, I mean, technically when it comes to light, white is a mixture of all colors, but at least, you know, when we see it, it seems to be the absence of color, basically, or only one single color as opposed to anything else. So therefore, sort of white represents the inner aspect of Bina, which points more towards Chachma, whereas the outer one is red because it comes down into the Midas, and in particular, which has to do with the blood and all that. So now we said that you have an animal where you had a suffix, whether it was drusa, whether it was harmed by a predator or something. So we said you have to check it on the inside, meaning when you're checking your midas to see are they really good or not, or do you need improvement in your midas, you can't necessarily look at the midas themselves, because sometimes you can have, the same action can be done, the same emotion can be done, and the same action can be done, and it could be for a good reason or a not such good reason. So you have to really look. So in terms of the Gemara, we said you won't be able to tell a drop of blood over there. So you have to look at them as they begin in Bina, in the inner aspect of it, and they'll be able to tell whether you have this Chachma, whether you have this Bittul. So therefore, that's why you check it on the inside. And then we said if the red and the white layers are switched around, then that represents that you don't have that truth of Chochma in your Bina, so that would be a problem, or the other way around, where the outer one is white, where you don't have this intensity and you don't have this emotion and this excitement about things of Kedusha. So either of those is no good. And he goes on to talk about what it means when there's a hole in the windpipe. It means, in other words, that now you have that things are getting, things of Kedusha are going, are being parasitized and going off where they shouldn't be, and as in terms of the animal where food is leaking out of the esophagus into the body, and then therefore that creates problems. So that's an explanation from the Friedrich Rebbe's Maimer, which the Rebbe said in a Maimer some years later and explained. So here we have an example. We talk about in general, we learn Torah on our physical level, and we learn about physical cows and chickens and whatnot, but we understand that all of those represent higher ruchniyistic things, and this is an example of that.
First of all, the layers are never inverted, never. You can't live if they're inverted, number one. And number two, the esophagus is just a conduit. It doesn't change the food. It does. Chochma interprets the data, the information.
First of all, Chochma doesn't actually interpret the data. Bina is more what interprets it. That's what we're representing by swallowing and beginning.
I mean,
Bina.
Right.
The esophagus itself, you're right, is basically just a tube that moves the food down, but therefore it represents more internal, beginning to internalize the idea. You're right. I mean, Chochma is to initially conceive the idea, and then Bina would be more the idea of internalizing it, which is represented in the body by swallowing the food and having it going down the esophagus. Yeah. As far as you're saying it can't be that they would be switched around, I mean, I don't know. Put it this way, the very fact that the Gemara mentions the possibility means that such a possibility exists. So it could be, for example, you could have, let's say, that the, I mean, are you realistically going to have, let's say, that the muscular layer is going to be on the inside and the mucosal layer is going to be on the outside? Maybe not. I mean, unless there was some, you know, unless there was some kind of real bad genetic mutation in this animal or something like that. But I suppose you could have, for example, I mean, we talked about yesterday, the postkin do talk about what if both of them are red? What if both of them are white? Is that also included? And you can have, for example, just the one that's supposed to look white ends up looking reddish because of infection or whatever. And the one that's supposed to look red, you know, there's not enough hemoglobin in, or myoglobin or whatever muscle protein in it, and therefore it looks white. So you could have such things. In any case, so now, getting back to more to the Gemara over here, so we were talking about, again, as far as the Turbit Savesht, now like this. In the first parak, we talked about the concept of Hagrama, which is doing the Shchita in the wrong place in the neck. There we focused on the windpipe. How high is too high to Shecht in it? Now we're talking about as far as the Vesht, as far as the esophagus. There's also an upper and lower limit where you can Shecht in it. So we said that one time there was a case where they started shechting in the turbat zavesht, in the pharynx, and then continued the rest of the shechita in the esophagus itself. And Rava had said he's going to declare it shreif based on a combination of the chumras of Rav and Shmuel. Rav holds that even a small hole in the turbat zavesht is enough to make the animal shreif. Therefore, now you have a small hole in it because it was cut through. you're going to say, but Rav holds that that's a valid place for Shchita, but Shmuel says it's not a place, it's not a valid place for Shchita. Shmuel says it's a problem only if the hole is most of the way through the Turbat Zavesh, but Rav says even a small hole would be enough. So we said Rav Abba criticized that and said that's wrong and he should have to pay for it. So now the Gemara continues on that topic. Omer Mar Brei de Ravina. Mar Brei de Ravina says that there's a different reason why it's hard to understand what Rava did over here. And he uses an unusual expression. I'm going to present a seeming contradiction against Rava's enemy. Now, meaning, in other words, he means Rava himself, but he's going to be bringing a brisa that calls somebody who follows true incompatible chumras, that we're going to bring a brisa that calls such a person a Rosha. Mabre de Ravina, of course, doesn't even want to suggest that he's calling Rava, but that he would even imply that Rava has such a title applied to him. Therefore, he uses this unusual expression, I'm going to ask a question on the enemy of Rava. We understand it to be a euphemism, but in other words, how could Rava do that, given that the brisa brands somebody who does that as a Rosha? Namely, the Brisa says, the halacha always follows Beis Hillel in their machlokas and with Beis Shammai. There's a few rare exceptions, but on the whole, the halacha follows Beis Hillel. There's the famous point that when Mashiach comes, the halacha will be like Beis Shammai, but right now, it's not like that. That connects with something this coming week's parasha is Parashas Korach. The Alter Rebbe talks about in Lechut Torah what Korach was trying to accomplish with his machlokas. The deeper idea of it was he was trying to show how the gevura of the Levium is higher than the chesed of the Kohenim, which is true la'asid lavay, which is the same reason why the halacha will be like the Shammai, because we'll see that gevura is higher than chesed, but he was kind of jumping the gun because we're not there yet. Anyway, the Braita continues, but if a person wants to follow Beis Shammai, he could. Now, the Gemara is going to ask in a few lines, wait a minute, if you just said the halacha is like Beis Hillel, how could you possibly follow Beis Shammai? We'll get to that point soon. But anyway, if a person wants to follow Beis Hillel, he can do that. On the other hand, but if he follows incompatible kulos of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, then he would be a Rosha. So an example of that was we talked about when vertebrae are missing from the spine. Now we said there was a machlokas, the Shammai Basilo, in a human spine, where if you have a complete human spine and a complete human skull, then those are matame, a person or kalim, or food and drinks, in an oihel, if they're under the same roof, or if one of them overshadows the other, but it has to be a complete spine. But Shammai holds that if there's two vertebrae or more missing from it, then it's not considered complete anymore, and therefore it's not matame in that way, only by touching or carrying it. Basilo says one. Now, the same machlokas we said applies as far as Tefes. Beis Shammai, who says that two vertebrae missing is enough to be considered, that you need that much for it to be considered an incomplete spine, they would hold when it comes to Tefes, that only if two or more vertebrae are missing is an animal Tefes. Whereas Beis Hillel, that says that one vertebra missing is enough that it's not a complete spine, they would also correspondingly say that by Tefes, one vertebra missing is enough to make the animal Tefes. So now, if a person were to follow the incompatible kulos of both of them, so for example, if he were to say, when it comes to Tumah V'Tahara, he's going to hold like this Hillel and say, because it's missing one vertebra, then therefore already it's not Matame Ba'ohel. But then he would apply the same, then he would apply, when it comes to Trefus, on the other hand, he would say, if we're going to follow Beis Shammai, and say that only if two vertebrae are missing, is the animal Trefa, then such a person is called a Rosha. Because those are incompatible kulos, and he can't be doing that. Mechumre Beis Shammai, Mechumre Beis Hillel, and if a person follows the incompatible chumras, which again, for example, let's say he were to say by Trefus, he would say that one vertebra missing is enough to make it Trefa, but by Tumah V'Tahara, he would say that when there's one vertebra missing, it's still complete, it's a complete spine, and only when there are two missing would it not be Matama anymore. So all of our kosareima, the person says about such a person, the posik says about such a person, aksil b'choshech holech, the fool walks in darkness. In other words, he's acting in darkness, one way or the other. It has to be compatible with one another, and he can't be like this. He's going in darkness as though like he's saying, well, I don't know what to do in each case, and therefore I'm going to be machmir. In both cases, pick a position and stick to it. Now, so again, we're talking about Rashi mentions over here and elsewhere where the Gemara brings this point, davka when these chumras are incompatible. There's no problem, for example, being machmir in one case like this Hillel and an entirely different case like this Shammai. There's not a problem with that. As the Gemara was just saying, you could follow this Shammai if you want. Although, again, we're going to get back to him and how is that possible once the halacha has been decided like this Hillel. But in any case, here we're talking about where the two chumras, or the two kulas, are incompatible because you have the same principle is being used in two different places, and you're going to decide inconsistently in one versus the other. So what you do is, so either if you're going to follow Bishamai, follow their kulas and their chumras, or follow Bishilo consistently as far as their kulas and their chumras. Most of the time, Bishamai is machmer and Bishilo is mekel. We have some exceptions, but if you want to, so you can follow either one of them as long as you're consistent. There is some discussion about that among the Mephoshim. There is something else, a different Gemara, that says that when you have something in Torah, you're supposed to go according to the Machmer, and here we're saying that you could go whether Lekumra or Lekula or Lekumra, so there's difference. There could be difference whether one of them is your Rebbe or not, and other considerations like that. And again, here where you have, where for example, incompatible kulas of Bishamai, or case where Bishamai is machmer, and based in one case, and based on the same principle, they're mekel in the other case, or vice versa. So if you're going to pick one, then you stick with it, even though it results in a kula in the other one. So before we get to, so how could Rava use two incompatible chumras of Rav and Shmuel, where again, we said it doesn't seem to work. If you're going to say, no matter either according to Rav or according to Shmuel, on the face of it, this animal should have been kosher. According to Rav, because it was a proper place for Shchita, and according to Shmuel, because a small hole in there wouldn't pass it anyway. First let's deal with the wording of the Braisa itself. Hogufa Kasha. You have a contradiction in the Braisa itself. Amrit, you're saying La'olam halacha to divrei Bishilul. You're saying the halacha is always like Bishilul, meaning don't follow Bishamai. V'hoda toni v'odo tzalasas k'divrei Bishamai yase. But then it says if you want to follow Bishamai, then you could do that. So halacha is decided like Bishilul. How can you decide on your own to follow Bishamai? And the answer is La'kasha kan kodem basko kan la'acha basko. It's before and after the baskel. The Gemara tells us in Erevin that Bishamai and Bishilul were arguing for a long time, and eventually a baskel came out and then called out, the halacha is like Bishilul. So then after that baskel, the halacha is like Bishilul, and you can't follow Bishamai anymore except in the rare cases where the halacha is decided like them. The Boisema Aflacha baskel, another answer, you could say even after the baskel, Rabbi Yeshua, he dama in Mashkichin Babaskel, because this Braisa would be following Rabbi Yeshua, who says that you can't follow a baskel. Which, in fact, we say, they have the famous thing Rabbi Yeshua says in the Machloikos with Rabbi Eliezer about Tano Shalachnoi. He says that in Mashgichin Babasko, we don't pay attention to a Basko, because instead we have the rule Achri Rabban Lahatis, we follow the majority. Which Tosfos points out in that case then, I mean, fine, so according to everybody else other than Rabbi Yeshua, we're saying we're following a Basko, but the fact is, in that story of Tano Shalachnoi, we don't say the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, even though they were also a Basko came and announced that what do you want with Rabbi Eliezer, the Halacha is always like. So Tosfos answers here, and they mention this in other places in Shas as well, a couple of things. First of all, there the Basko was just for the honor of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is arguing with the Chachamim, and he's maintaining his position. Why he was maintaining it against the other Chachamim is a whole question in itself, but in any case, he was. And so at one point, after he tries various Nisim, after he exhausts all his arguments, and they haven't been convinced, and he tries various Mice and Nisim with the water channel and the tree and so on and so forth, and they don't listen to that either. And he says, if the halacha is like me, then a baskel should come and announce that. And a baskel comes and announces it. But so we're saying, so the answer would be that baskel was not really to tell the chachamim the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. It was for the honor of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, the great tzaddik, is appealing to a baskel, so a baskel will come for him. Doesn't mean that we should follow it. Another point also, Tosfos points out, is the two baskels did different things. In the baskel saying that the halacha is like this Hillel is only confirming what the Chachamim had already decided based on the regular rule of Achrid Abim Lahantis. This Hillel was a majority over Beis Shammai, therefore the halacha has to be like them following that rule. So the baskel came and confirmed, you should know, don't second guess yourselves that maybe you shouldn't have followed Beis Hillel, because in fact the halacha is indeed like them. As the Gemara there mentions reasons why, and the point is also, even though it says over there that Bishamai were mechadidin tfei, Bishamai were, the people of Bishamai were exceptionally sharp in their ability to analyze Torah and come to conclusions. So the Chachamim might think, you know what, after all said and done, who says the majority of us were correct? So therefore the Bat Skol is only coming and confirming what they had already decided based on the regular rules of Halacha. As opposed to with Rebbe Eliezer, it's the other way around. The Bat Skol is coming to say you should follow him being the minority, and he's the minority. So it goes against the usual rule of Acher Adam Lahatis.
How come a Bat Skol can decide Halacha in this world when the Torah specifically says that the Chachamim decide what's halacha and what's not halacha?
That's exactly it. So we're saying the Bat Skol in and of itself does not decide halacha. According to the first answer of Tosfos, we have to consider what the purpose of the Bat Skol is. Is it coming to tell us, is it coming, in the case of Rebbe Eliezer, it's only coming for his honor. He appealed to a Bat Skol, so a Bat Skol came, and therefore we're going to disregard it. As opposed to with the Shammai Gazilla, nobody appealed for a Bat Skol. It came out on its own. But according to the second answer, even then, we're not using a Bat Skol. We're just using it to confirm what we already knew. We know Acher Adam Lahatis, the Bat Skol came and said, good, Chachamim, you decided correctly. Don't second-guess yourselves, as opposed to with Rebbe Eliezer. It's telling us the other way around. It would tell us follow a single opinion, which Acher Adam Lahatis goes against that. So we don't listen to the Bat Skol in that case.
But we don't need any confirmation if we are the ones to decide. Why should our decision be confirmed?
Fine, because still, you know, they were arguing over it for a long time. And after all, like we said, Beshame was machadidi tfei. They were extra sharp in their analysis of halacha. So the Chachamim might still think to themselves, you know what? Okay, we decided based on Acher Adam Lahatis, but were we really correct? Maybe after all, we weren't really mechaven to Hashem's true rotzen. So Bat Skol comes and confirms, no, you did the right thing. So we're not deciding halacha based on the Bat Skol. It helps confirm that they did the right thing, so their minds should be at ease, and they shouldn't be second-guessing themselves that maybe, after all, we should have continued to debate the matter.
So you're saying, basically, which is that the Chachamim were not 100% sure that they were correct?
I think they weren't 100% sure, but even if they're sure, they can be sure of their halacha, and still they can be second-guessing themselves. You know what? After all, did we do the right thing? Maybe we should be reconsidering it. It happens, you know, Rav gives a psak halacha, and so he's thinking to himself, you know what, after all, was it really correct? So it's always good to have confirmation. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point is, again, when the Braisa is saying, first the halacha is like this Hillel, and then it's saying, if you want to follow this Shammai, you could. So there's two possibilities. Either the Braisa is saying the halacha is like this Hillel, after the Chachamim voted to that effect, and it was confirmed by a Bat Skol. But before that, you could follow Beis Shammai if you wanted. Or we're saying, even after that, maybe you could follow Beis Shammai because we don't pay attention to the Bat Skol. The important thing is what the Chachamim here on earth decide. In any case, so there's no contradiction in the Braisa itself, but in any case, Mekol Mokom Kasha. At any rate, getting back to the Gemara, we have a question. So again, Rava is paskening like an incompatible Chumra of Rav and an incompatible Chumra of Shmuel. Based on this Braisa, that wasn't right. It's called Aksil B'Chol Shecholach. Therefore, Mar Brei de Ravina said at the bottom of the previous Amud, I'm asking a question, so to speak, on the enemy of Rava. Because how could I possibly be saying something that the Braisa is saying that a person who does that is a ksil, is a fool? But nevertheless, we have to understand. So what was Rava thinking? So the answer is Amar Rav Tavus Kula Karav Avda. The answer is all of it was actually done according to Rav. There's no incompatible humorous over here. What Rava is saying is in fact completely like Rav. How is that? We said on the face of it, didn't Rav say that the Turbat Avesh is a proper place for Shvita? So what's the problem? Because the key also Rami Bar Yechezkel. Now, in other words, Tosfos says when the Gemara had said before we're going to apply the Chumras of Rav and Shmuel, that wasn't not necessarily did Rava actually say that. That was the Gemara's assumption of what Rava was doing. In other words, it's the Gemara's like editorial comment on what Rava is doing. But now we're going to see that if not so, then in fact Rava's sack can be justified based exclusively on Rav's opinion. And again, Tosfos points out that we learned this briefly yesterday, that the Gemara could actually find a way to make it work all according to Shmuel as well. However, we have a rule that when it comes to matters of Ister Veheter, the halacha is like Rav against Shmuel, and therefore the Gemara would prefer to say, so even though the Gemara could say that he's following Shmuel, the Gemara would prefer to say that he's following Rav, because that strengthens the point that therefore the halacha is like him, because in Dini Ister Veheter, the halacha is like Rav against Shmuel. So, what is it? Did he also Rami Bar Yechezkel, when Rami Bar Yechezkel came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he said, Yehuda Rav. Don't pay attention to these rules that my brother Yehuda says in the name of Rab. Rabbi Yehuda Plain in Shas is Rabbi Yehuda by Yecheskel. He has a brother, Rami by Yecheskel. So he's saying that my brother, Rabbi Yehuda, teaches a lot of things in the name of Rab, but you should know not all of them are correct. In fact, actually, Rashi says here you don't even have Rabbi Yehuda mentioned in the sugya until now. But in general, when we have something reported in the name of Rav, usually it's often going to be through Rabbi Yehuda. But now Rami Bar Yecheskel says here, my brother Rabbi Yehuda didn't get it correct, and Rav didn't actually say that. He says, Hochi Omer Rav, rather, Rami Bar Yecheskel says, you should know, what did Rav really say? Vesht nosnu by chachamim shir. When it comes to the esophagus, the Chachamim gave a shear up to what point, how high in it is kosher for shchita, and that means so that implies, Hagoyes Abach adds actually a couple of extra words, since the Chachamim have to give an upper limit for it, so Miklal, that implies the Turbet Zavesh lav mokum shchitahu, that the Turbet Zavesh is not a valid place for shchita, v'ka'omer b'mashahu. And now Rav had also said, this that we quoted before, that Rav said that a hole in the Turbet Zavesh, b'mashahu, even a small hole, is enough to make the animal treif. Okay, so good. So therefore, in other words, once we have Rami Bar Yechezkel's explanation of what Rav said, then it comes out that to say that a shchita that began in the Turbet Zavesh would make the animal treif is in fact consistent according to Rav, and we don't have to apply incompatible chumras of Rav and Shmuel. The same Rav who says that a small hole in the Turbet Zavesh is enough to make the animal treif also says that shchita there is possible. So here we're talking about, in this case, the entire shchita was not done there, just part of it, but nevertheless, that part involves obviously making a hole in the Turbet Zavesh, and therefore the animal is treif on that basis. So no problem that Rav is that Rava then is using incompatible chumras. Tosfos points out, I mean, you could argue that shear means maybe there's a lower limit, but no, he doesn't say, so it means that we would assume that it means that the Chachamim are giving us an upper and a lower limit on the vesht, and saying that the shchita has to be between those places. In fact, other Mephoshim point out as well that the Gemara is soon going to bring that Rav says that it's kosher the entire length all the way down to the bottom of the esophagus. So therefore, obviously, when he says nosna by shir, it must mean that there's an upper limit, and that upper limit would be before the Turbet Zavesh. Okay. Now, l'mayla ad kama, so the question now will be, up on top, if you're going up on the vesht, how high up can you shecht? Up until what you can grasp with the hand. So Rashi says two explanations. First, he brings from his Murdi Hazokin, from my elder Rebbe. Rashi had a couple of Rebbeim. There's one of them, I think Rabbi Yaakov, who he consistently calls Murdi Hazokin. So he says that means, in other words, towards the head end, you have to leave at least 3 or 4 finger widths of the vesh that you don't cut, and then start cutting below that. Rashi's second explanation, he says, Shamaiti, that I heard, it means what you would hold with your fingertips. But Rashi says, no, that can't be called tfisas yad. To hold something with your fingertips can't really be called holding it properly. So it would have to mean the actual finger width, so you could actually hold on to it solidly. So in other words, so you have to have at least that amount of the esophagus uncut, and start cutting below that. Tosfos brings from the Rivon that explains that this would only be that this amount of 4 etzbos would apply to very large animals. As animals are smaller, then you scale it down. Then you scale it down appropriately. Then Tosfos brings another explanation from the Bahag, one of the Uli Goinim, the Baal Halachos Gedolos, who says that actually Tfidei Tfisas Yad would be the amount of space that you can hold with 2 fingers. And Tosfos says, fine, that's Divrei Kabbalah. What they say, what the Bahag says, is a direct Kabbalah from the Amoraim, and therefore we can accept that. So therefore the definition then is you don't have to leave 4 etzbos at the top. It's enough to leave 2 etzbos, according to the Bahag, and Tosfos is saying we should follow that. In Trofanaro, actually, when it brings the denim. So it meant the machaber brings the two fingers, and then the Rama brings Yesh Omrim four fingers. The Rama also brings actually a Kabbalah from earlier generations that with any animal, what it is the amount will be if you bend down the animal's ear, then the place where the animal's ear reaches, that is the highest point in the esophagus in which you can shecht, and it'll be a valid shechita. So that'll also scale, as Tosfos had said, that'll scale according to the size of the animal, and again, therefore, and with birds, it'll also scale according to the size of the bird. When we learned yesterday, we had the expression in the Gemara, Yona Omer Abzeda Mavlata. So we said there's two different explanations of what Yona means. Does it mean the name of is it the name of someone who reports in the name of Rabzeda? That's the definition of Turbat Savesh is Mavlata, the area where it swallows, or is it Yona, meaning specifically in a dove, it's that place. So the consensus of the post-skim is the first explanation, and therefore it means that there's no difference between a dove and any other bird. The Turbat Savesh is the same size by all, is the same proportional size by all of them. Okay, so that's the highest limit of shechita. So in short, you can't shecht in the turbits of vesht, you have to shecht in the vesht itself, with this definition of two or four tzvois from the top of it, scaled to the size of the animal or the bird. What about the Gemara continues, lamata ad kama? Okay, how about further down on the vesht? What's the lowest point in the vesht that you would be in the esophagus that you would be allowed to shecht? So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avuah, ad kadesh yasir, until the point where it gets hairy. Now you have, so the esophagus goes straight into the rumen, the first stomach of the animal. Now that first stomach, like I was telling you the other day when we were talking about the digestive process of a cud chewing animal, that first stomach, the rumen, the grass or whatever it is that it eats, sits there for a while, and over time bacteria start acting on it in order to increase the surface area for the bacteria to do their job and for absorption from there to do its job. You have little hair-like protrusions from it, villi, they're called in English, V-I-L-L-I, which, you have those in different places in the body that help give them a larger surface area for absorption. So now, in the keres itself, in the rumen itself, you have those hair-like things, those villi. In the esophagus, you don't have it. So when you get down to the point where it starts being hairy, where it's covered with those protrusions, then it means at that point you're not in the vesht anymore. At that point, you're down already in the stomach itself. So the Gemara says, "Any, is that so?" Ravina says in the name of Gniva, who in turn says in the name of Rab, Tefach bevesht samoch lekeres, the lowest tefach of the esophagus, closest to the keres, to the rumen. Zehu keres apnimi, that is the definition of keres apnimi, which we had in the Mishnah. We said if there's a hole there, then it makes it chaf. So we're going to have later on Daf Nun, we're going to talk about what exactly the definition of keres apnimi is, and one explanation is that the lowest tefach of the esophagus is already called the keres apnimi. So what are you telling me, that you can shecht anywhere in the esophagus, all the way down to where the hairs, where the villi begin, when we're saying that even the lowest tefach of it is already called the keres? Now at this point, the Gemara is assuming that the hairs, the villi, don't extend up into the esophagus at all. They're all completely inside the keres. So then it comes out that last tefach, though, is already called the keres. So you see that well above the place where the hairiness begins would already be possible for shechita. So the question is, amai, so why should you be allowed to shecht at that low point in the esophagus? Kika shochet, the keres kashochet. At that point, if you're shechting, it comes out you're shechting in the keres, because we're saying the definition, according to that way of looking at it, the definition of keres apnimi already includes that last tefach of the esophagus. So the Gemara answer is no. Ema, you have to correct the report that we said. What Rav actually said was, tefach b'keres samoch levesht, zeu keres apnimi. The other way around, the upper tefach of the keres closest to the esophagus is called keres apnimi, and at that point, even a small hole will make the animal treif, as opposed to other parts of the keres. According to that way of looking at it, you would need a larger hole for it to be treif. We're going to talk about those details on Daf Nun. So in other words, we would say, so the other way around, the entire vesht is the vesht. And then we have, then you have a tefach, the first tefach of the keres, of the woman. That's the definition of keres apnimi, of our Mishnah, and then you have the rest of it, which is the keres plain. So therefore, so it still works out to say that you could shecht anywhere in the vesht, because, yeah, none of that has any of these, any of this hairy protrusions yet. Or another explanation, you could say, Kikama Rav, you know, maybe the original version of what we said, that the last tefach of the vesht is already considered the keres, but maybe that's specifically betura, we're talking about with an ox, the master tfe, where you have an extra large number of these hairs, of these villi, which actually stick up into, in the case of an ox, they actually do stick it up into the esophagus. So therefore, so you could say that there, we would still be consistent. Any place where you have those protrusions is already considered part of a keres, is already considered part of the keres. Rav's definition of keres apnimi, according to that report of Ravina in the name of Gniva, would be that in most animals that begins only with the keres itself, the rumen itself, and then you have with oxen, where the hair, the villi, stick up in the, start at the bottom of the esophagus, then that would be included as well. But any place, once you have those hairs, then you can't shecht there anymore. So it would still be consistent then. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel. Let's continue talking about the turbits avesht. Turbits avesht shenitol kula milechi, if the turbits avesht is completely detached from the jaw. So the turbits avesht, we were saying before, is the pharynx. It's a tissue over there, which is the entryway to the esophagus. So normally it's a layer of tissue that's connected to the muscles underneath it by ligaments or whatever. Here we're saying that if it's completely removed and detached from the muscles and the jawbone, kosher, then it would still be kosher. The tuna tuna, and indeed we learn a Mishnah to that effect later on in our Perek. And by the way, as far as the previous thing, I forgot to mention that here when we're talking about as far as an ox versus other animals, so what other animals do we mean? So we're showing him talk about, do we mean oxen as opposed to other species of animals? Although Rabbeinu Gershom says that even within oxen itself, depends on the size, sometimes the hairs will stick out, it will stick up into the vesht, and sometimes not, really depends on the size of the individual animal. So practically speaking, I guess you'd check and you'd see where you can find those villi and where not, depending on the individual animal. Sichas Cholin has a footnote about it talking about that. Does Torah mean any ox, or does it mean only particularly large oxen? Continuing with the turbits avesht again. So we said turbits avesht shenitol kula milechi kosher. If it's completely detached from the jaw, it's kosher. The tuna tuna, and indeed the Mishnah, in the next Mishnah in our Perek, teaches something from which we can derive that point. It says nitol lechi atachten kosher. If the lower jaw was removed, then the animal is still kosher. Now, if the lower jaw is removed, then obviously the turbits avesht is not going to be attached to it anymore. And yet we see the animal is kosher. So therefore, we see such a thing as fine. Incidentally, by the way, the Rambam has an interesting shita on that he says, dafka, if the lower jaw was removed, then the animal is kosher. But he says, if the upper jaw was removed, then the animal would actually be treif. So the Chachmei Lunel, the Chacham of Lunel in the south of France, who were in regular contact with the Rambam, they asked him one time about that, where did he get that from? And the Rambam explains to them, because according to medical science, the upper jaw of the animal is needed in order to warm up the air that's going to go into the lungs. So if the lower jaw is missing, fine. The animal may have a hard time eating, but you can force feed it. You can stick the food into its pharynx, and from there it'll go down into the esophagus, and it'll be able to eat, and everything will be good. But with the upper jaw missing, the Rambam says what's going to happen is cold air is going to get into the lungs, and therefore the animal is not going to survive that for very long. Not everybody agrees, and not everybody agrees with him, but the Mechaber brings, according to the Rambam, it's treifa, and if it's veroi lochol shel dvarav, it's good to be concerned for what he says and declare the animal treifa in that case. Okay. So anyway, so again, Shmuel is saying that if the Turbet Zavesh was detached from the jaw, yeah, because we see if the entire jaw was removed, then the animal is still kosher. But Maskiflo Rapapa, but Rapapa questions that. But Ikru Simonim, isn't there a problem though if the jaw is removed, then and in particular we're talking about over here, if the Turbet Zavesh is detached from its connection on the jaw, then it means that you have Ikru Simonim, that you have the Simonim have been detached from their places. And we learned before, the simonim, the windpipe and the esophagus, have to be still attached to their places. And if not, then they're treif. We talked about earlier in the Masechta, is it that the animal is treifa, or is it even it might be nevela? We talked about Rashi and Tosfos had discussed this earlier in the Masechta. Tosfos had brought from the Halachas Gdolos that it might even be nevela, because once the simonim have been detached from where they're supposed to be attached, then you can't possibly shech the animal correctly. So Rapapa is wondering that you have ikru simonim. So the Gemara says, well, Papa Kashamas Nisin. Okay, well, then we have to understand. So Tosfos has some discussion about all the ins and outs of that. What is the grounds to say that Ikru Simonim would be a problem? Again, is it a trefa like all the other trefas that we're mentioning in this parak, or is this maybe this case of nevela that therefore because you can't even shecht it at all? So Tosfos points out, if you say that it's only trefa, then yeah, then what's the Gemara's question? Why just a hole in the turbot zavesht is not necessarily going to be such a problem as it would be in the vesht in the esophagus itself. So why would it be so bad? And Tosfos goes and discusses the ins and outs of that. Anyway, so the Gemara answers. So the Gemara says, Ula Rapapa Kasha Masnissin, new, according to Rapapa, wouldn't the Mishnah be difficult? Rapapa is asking a question, wouldn't there be Ikru Simonim? But he's aware that the Mishnah says that if the bottom jaw is missing, then the animal is still kosher. So how is he going to understand that Mishnah if he's thinking that there's going to be Ikru Simonim in that case? So the Gemara says, Bishleima Lamasnissin, so Nita Lechia Tachton Kosher, where the Mishnah says that if the bottom jaw is removed, the animal is kosher. So how would Rapapa understand that? So, Bishleima Masnissin Rapapa Lekasha. So you could answer that the Mishnah is not a Kasha on Rapapa because there's a difference how it was removed. You can have where it was ripped out. We can have where that lower jaw, where the vest is actually ripped off of the jaw and of the jaw and of the muscles and everything. So now Rapapa is concerned Ikru Simonim. What would you say? What would the Mishnah mean that it's kosher? Or the igum may love simonim. Where's the case in the Mishnah that the lower jaw is missing and the animal is still kosher? Would be where it was cut off, where the simonim remained attached to the muscles and the ligaments where they're supposed to, and it was only that the lower jaw was cut off. So everything below that still remains in place. In that letter between the Rambam and the Chachmei Lunel, where they asked him about that, they said, as far as we understood, the reason why if the lower jaw is missing and it's okay is because, like the Gemara is saying over here, there's no Ikru Simonim, but in that case, they ask him, so what does the upper jaw have to do with that? The Simonim are nowhere near that anyway. And the Rambam says, in neither case is there an issue of Ikru Simonim. The issue with the upper jaw is that matter of the cold air, etc. Anyway, Ela L'shmuk, so Ari Igum Igumi may love Simonim, so where it was cut above the Simonim, so now the Turbet Zavesh is not attached to anything anymore because the jaw has been cut off, but nevertheless, it's far enough above the Simonim that they still remain attached to each other and along their length in their muscles and ligaments and all that, as they're supposed to, then find the Mishnah saying it's kosher. Okay, Ela L'shmuel Kasha, but according to Shmuel, you would still have Rapapa's question, because when Shmuel says Turbet Zavesh Shenital, it sounds like it was actually detached forcefully from the jaw. Well, in that case, you're going to have Ikru Simonim in that case. And in fact, the wording that he says, when you say nital lechia tachton, when the Mishnah says the lower jaw was removed, fine, you could understand that it means it was cut away and the simonim are left alone. But when Shmuel says turbet zavesht, when Shmuel says turbet zavesht shenital kule milechi, that it was completely removed from the jaw, it sounds like it was torn away from the jaw. Well, then you have a possible problem of ikru simonim. First of all, so the answer is loitema kule ela ema ruboy. So you have to answer. And when Shmuel said if it was completely detached, he doesn't mean all of it, he really means ruboy, most of it. So some of it is still attached. So then you don't have a problem of ikru simonim. So fine, the Mishnah from later on in the Perek is not going to be a proof for him, because there you can be that there was no pulling away at all, just cutting. But Shmuel is saying that even if it was pulled away, as long as it was only most of it and not all of it, then the simanim will still remain in place. Okay. But the Gemara says, "Va'omer Rabbi Babachana Amar Shmuel Simonim Shnidaldelu Beruban Tefa." Didn't Rabbi Babachana also say in the name of Shmuel though that if the Simonim are mostly detached, if they're mostly detached from the jaw, so as a Tefa, then also it's Tefa. This is one of the ones on Mendez on Mendez when we have the Shev Shmeitzer, the seven statements of Amoroyim that we said of cases of Tefas that are not explicitly mentioned in the Mishnah. This was one of them, that if the Simonim are mostly Nidaldalu, they were mostly unmoored from their places or from each other, then the animal is Tefa. So you see that even Ruban should be a problem. And the answer is Amar of Shisha Bere Devedi. There's still a difference within that itself. Hod Ikbal Ikpuli, when Shmuel's saying that it's kosher, would be where it was kind of peeled off. Ikbal literally means folded, but Rashi explains it's not really Ikbal, but really the rule is Ikbal, basically, from Iklaf, it would be, it would really be, in other words, that it means that was peeled off. So the Turbat Sabesh was peeled off from the jaw, the muscle or whatever, and there was no forceful thing. Hod ifruk, ifruki, as opposed to when it was torn away more violently than it tends to be like it's sort of half attached, a little here, a little there. So even the part that's still attached is not really so consistently attached. It's still like attached a little here, a little there. Therefore, that kind of thing is not going to heal, as opposed to when it was peeled off, then eventually it can heal, and therefore the animal can live, and therefore the animal can live for a while. Agos Abach brings a whole different gear server here that Shmuel had said that only if most of it we said before that Shmuel says that if most of the Turbat Havesh has a hole in it, then it would be treif. And then the Gemara gives an answer that there's a difference whether it was peeled off or whether it has a hole in it. And then the Gemara brings the point also, so then according to the Agos Abach, in other words, you have three different possibilities the Gemara is going to bring, where you have a hole, where it was, where you have a hole, where there it would be treif, with even a small hole, there it would be treif, only if it's ruboy, only if it's most of it, as Shmuel had said. You have where it was peeled off the muscles, then you have also where simonim shenidaldalu, you have where it was torn away forcefully, and now the simonim themselves and the turbat havesh are only attached here and there, and then the animal would be treif. Okay. So the Gemara says now, the Mishnah had said, Upsukas Hagargeres. So all this time we were talking about the first, all this was a discussion of the first Trefa that it mentioned in the Mishnah, the Korvas Havesh, where there's a hole in the esophagus, and then so we were talking about the esophagus itself, and then about the Turbat Havesh, which leads into it. Now comes the next thing. The Mishnah had said, Upsukas Hagargeres. The second Trefa in the Mishnah, and again we had Rava saying in the previous perek that maybe these two are actually Nevela, not Trefa, but in any case, Psukas HaGargeres, where the windpipe is cut, or severed, or whatever. So, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kama Psukas HaGargeres, how much of it has to be cut or severed in order for the animal to be Trefa? Beruba, so it has to be most of it. The Kama Ruba, what's considered most of it? Rav Amar Roiv Oivya. Rav says it means most of its thickness. Now, Rashi brings a couple of possibilities what that means. First, Rashi brings that it maybe means most of the thickness of the wall of it. But Rashi says that doesn't work. All this time we've been saying that a din of a hole in the esophagus is worse than the din of a hole in the windpipe. And the reason for it would be because of even a hole in the windpipe, an animal or a person can still survive with a hole in it. Like you have nowadays, they do a tracheotomy for a person, for example, and they can still live. As opposed to the esophagus, like we said, when there's holes in it, then food will leak out inside the body and cause problems over there. So Rashi's first explanation is that Yesh Omrim, he says it means most of the thickness of the wall of it, but no, because it's clear from everything we've learned so far that the dinim of holes in the esophagus are much stricter than dinim of holes in the windpipe, and here you'd be saying that even a hole most of the way through the thickness of the windpipe would be no good. So Rashi instead explains what it means is, so it doesn't mean that. What it actually means is, of course we're talking about the inner, surface of the windpipe. But what we mean is, in other words, that you have, you can talk about the width of it, or you can talk about the length of it in terms of, in other words, are you parallel to the front of the neck, or are you perpendicular to it? So basically, in other words, when we say ovya over here, roiv ovya, which means the most of the thickness of it, in other words, we would start from the front side of it, which faces towards the front of the neck, and then go and see whether the cut extends until most of the way through the thickness of it in that direction. In particular, what you have is, we've learned previously that the windpipe is surrounded by rings of cartilage, and that those rings are thicker in the front and thinner in the back. So when you reach most of the thickness, including, in other words, when you include the thickness of that front wall of it, then that would be what's called the roiv ovya. It actually points out it's actually the other way around, that the thickness of it is thicker on the neck side and thinner on the other side. Yeah. So therefore, you have roiv ovya, then it would be when you reach the point that when you cut through most of that thickness, and you start going into it, and then you have as you're going further in, so you may not have even reached half the thickness of the windpipe yet, but you've already reached half the thickness, including the rings of cartilage around it. So that's what Rashi explains that it means. But Amrila, Roiv Halala, others say it would mean most of the inside of it. So in other words, in the second version, we would ignore the thickness of the walls of it itself and see it's only Tefa, only if most of the actual inside of it has been cut. If the cut or hole or whatever extends all the way until past the midpoint of the inside of it, which would be slightly further. Because it's thicker towards the front of the neck, then therefore it means that since the walls of it are thicker towards the front of the neck, then it means that when you reach the point of having cut through most of the circumference of the whole thing, including the cartilage, you haven't yet reached the point of halfway through the inner hole of it, basically. So the second opinion, in other words, would be more makel than the first one. So the Gemara tells, one time an animal with its windpipe cut came before Rav, was brought before Rav as a shayla. Yosef v'kabodik lo b'roiv ovya. So Rav was going and checking, has the hole extended to roiv ovya, according to the first opinion. In other words, he's checking. And let's put some numbers on it. Let's say, for example, the actual width of the inside of the windpipe is, let's say, for example, 5 inches. So over two and a half inches of that would be roiv halala, would make the animal tefa. But now, if we count also the width of the cartilage in front, and then as it narrows towards the back, let's say, for example, the total thing comes now to 8 inches. So now he was checking whether it's been cut through more than 4 inches of that, even though maybe that hasn't reached the midpoint of the inner airspace of it. But Rav Kahana and Rav Asi tell him, you, Rebbe, taught us that you have to look at Roiv Halala, you have to look at the inside of it and ignore the walls of muscle and cartilage and all that. So the Gemara says, Shadri the Kameh de Rav Labachana. So he sent it to Rav Labachana. Rav Labachana was actually a relative of Rav, so maybe that's why he sent it to him. Bodka Baroy Halala. Sure enough, he checked it in most of its inside circumference and he declared it kosher. The Zavan Mina Bitlesu Istiri Pshiti Bisra. And Rav Labachana went so far as he went and bought 13 extirid pshitis worth of meat from the animal to demonstrate, in other words, that it's completely kosher. Where extirid pshiti, Rashi explains like this. An istira is otherwise known as a sella. But a sella, they had two different types of coinage in those days. They had a coinage which was almost pure silver, which was called kesef tsuri. And then they had one where they used the same denominations, but 7/8 of it was base metal, copper or whatever, and only 1/8 of it was copper. So it was worth only 1/8 as much, but it still bore the same face value. Since in those times, coinage was worth according to the amount of metal in it, so it comes out that the second time, which is called Kesef Medina, was worth 1/8 as much as the other one. So you would talk about a Sela Tsuri versus a Sela Medina. Here, Rashi explains that Istiri Pshiti means over here the second kinds, the Sela Medina, the ones that are only 1/8 silver. So you're not talking, so 13 sloim of it, 13 istiri of it, is not that much, but it's still, I mean, it's a chunk of meat. So he bought that amount of it to eat, to demonstrate that he holds that it's kosher. But the Gemara asks, the Heichi Ovid Hochi, how could Rabbi Baba Hana do that? Vatanya, Chocham Shetime, we learn in a Braisa that when one Chocham declares something Tomei, Ein Chaveir Ashoy Latar, another Chocham, another Ra, another Chocham, another Ra, another Rav, is not allowed to declare it Tahar. Osar, and if one Rav declares it Osar, Ein Chaveir Ashoy Lahatir, another Rav is not allowed to declare it Mutter. So once Rab had said that it's Terefa, because he found that it's already Roiv Oivya. Fine, his Talmidim, Rav Hana and Rav Asya, pointing out to him that he elsewhere said Roiv Halala, but nevertheless, he didn't change his psak. He still maintained his psak. So fine, he sent it to Rav Rav Hana. How could Rav Rav Hana now declare it kosher if Rav had said it's also? So the answer is Trani Hoch, the Rav Le Osa Mesa. That's exactly it. Rav over here did not actually declare it also. He was checking it, the Roiv Oivya, but he didn't finish checking it. If he had finished checking it and declared it's Tzrefer because it's already Roiv Oivya, then yes, Rav Lachana couldn't pass him differently. But here he didn't. He was in the middle of checking it when Rav Kahana and Rav Asi interrupted him and pointed out, wait, you know, it's not exactly that you should be checking. You should be checking the other way, and therefore, so Rav never had a chance to actually give his psak halacha. So Rav Avachana is perfectly entitled to paskin differently than what Rav would have paskin on because he didn't actually paskin yet. As far as, by the way, what Rashi is saying over here about the windpipe and about the circumferences of it in different places is actually quite a bit of discussion because you look at the actual anatomical structure in an animal, and it's the wording that Rashi uses over here about how it's thicker here and thinner there or whatever is a little hard to understand when you look at the actual thing. So there's quite a bit of discussion what exactly Rashi means. Obviously, Rashi checked animals and could see what they actually were, so how to make it work with Rashi's lashon over here, there's a bit of discussion. In any case, the point is that we're saying, as far as the halacha, Rav Rav Hana is allowed to paskin because Rav had not, in fact, paskin yet. Okay, the Gemara asks, fine, but here's another question. The Kivin de Uri Bachacham, once we have, it became a Shaila, and you have to ask, a Chacham whether it's by the way, Tosfos mentions over here that later on in the Perek, we do have another case like that. We have a case involving the liver and a needle found in it where there were different Amiroyim who argued whether it's Shrei for Kosher. So how could they do that? Again, how would that fit with this Gemara over here? And Tosfos deals with this whole matter of when we say, when is a Rav allowed to paskin differently than a previous Rav and when not. Okay. So the question is, v'heichi oved hochi still, how could Rav Avachon, no, so v'kivin de'uri v'chocham, but the question is, once a chocham had to paskin about it, heichi ochominah, how would Rav Avachon himself now be able to eat from it? You have the pasuk which we learned last week. Where Yechezkel says when Hashem is telling him that he has to bake his siege type bread on a fire made of human waste, of coals from human waste. And I said, Aho Hashem alekim, woe, and accept my tefillah Hashem alekim. Hine nafshi lo mitumah. Behold, my soul has not been made tamei. Or nevelo treifa lo yachaltim in urei v'adata. And from my youth until now, I never ate nevelo and treifa. V'leivav b'fi b'sar pigul, and mouth and meat of pigul never turtle came into my mouth. And as we learned over there on Laman Zayin or Beis Yechezkel, can't mean with all of that that he's just been fulfilling the mitzvahs of the Torah, because there's nothing to be proud of about that. That's the basic thing that's expected of every yid. So how could he ask for special dispensation from Hashem based on that? So rather, we understand that each of these things means that he was holding himself to a higher level. He means I never thought thoughts of Isser, thoughts of Arayas by day that should cause me to have to become Tomei with Keri by night, which we talked about over there. It's very difficult. A person is usually subject to Hore Avera, and he went the extra mile not to do that, and therefore he says Nafshi Lo Mitumaa in the passive form. So that's that. Or nevela or trefa layachalti, when he says I never ate nevela or trefa, means not just plain old nevela or trefa, means shalayachalti, but sa'a kois nei olam, I never ate meat that they say shecht, because we were talking about over there, masakenes, an animal that's dangerously ill and almost and about to die, where we said it is kosher to eat, but nevertheless Yechezkel was saying I was machmir on myself not to eat it. So that's, and we said it's called nevela or trefa, it's close to being a nevela, and it's similar. And it's close to being a nevela, and therefore he won't eat it. And the levava feed beside pigle, and when he finishes off, it never came into my mouth. Meat of pigle means two explanations. One explanation is I never ate from an animal where a chacham had to pass skin, that it's kosher. Because like we said there, a shayla mach tereis, once you have to ask a shayla, then already there's a concern, and therefore he was machmer on himself not to eat it, as we talked about over there. Marashah says, the vote is, in a way it's like pigle, where there's machshava. That's possible the same way there was machshava at one point that this animal is tereis. Mishum Rav Nosson Amru, and the name of Rav Nosson, they said a different explanation, that Yechezkel was saying, I never ate from meat from an animal where the matonis, the Zroi L'chayayim V'keva, were not taken off. Now, Yechezkel himself was a Kohen, he could have just eaten it from the animal without taking them off, but he would be careful to separate them out. Once he separates them, he himself, as a Kohen, could eat them, but nevertheless, he was careful to separate them first, even though later on in the Masechta we talk about that it's not according to the halacha, it's not also to eat before those are taken. Nevertheless, he was careful with himself not to do that. In any case, the point is, we see that a person is not supposed to eat, that someone like of the caliber of Yechezkel is not supposed to eat from a behemah shahoda b'chacham. So how is Rav Lavachana eating from this animal where he had paskin that it's mutter? And the answer is, this is where there was a shayla on it. So the answer is Hanimili Milsa Detalya Besvara. That would apply when it's a matter of Svara. When he has to think of his own Svara, is there a reason why it should be kosher or not? And we're going to have examples of it later. In our perek. So here, we were talking about before, about the Chachamim second-guessing themselves. So here, you have, for example, that Rashi mentions, for example, later in the Perek, when we talk about Trefus in the lungs. So you have a case where you have to compare things in two different lungs or in two different parts of the lungs. Is it really a valid comparison, or maybe are you looking at it a little bit wrongly or something? Other examples like that. But here it wasn't a matter of svara. Rav Lavachana, a gemara samach. Here, Rav Lavachana is relying on what he learned from his Rebbe, that in fact it's only roiv halala would be a problem, and not roiv hekefa, and therefore there's no problem with him eating from an animal that had a shayla on that, because, in other words, from the point of view of that he's relying on what he learned from his Rebbe, means there's no shayla here even in the first place. Okay. The Gemara asked for typical Mishum Chashta. Fine, but isn't there another reason why he shouldn't be buying meat from this animal? There might be Chashad. People might suspect that maybe he declared it kosher in order to be able to eat from the meat, or not just to eat from the meat, because then the guy who owns the animal is going to do him a favor and sell him the meat cheaply. So people might suspect that he did that. The Tanya, and we learn in a Braisa, Donas Adin, when a Dayan judges a case, Rashi gives it, you know, let's say, for example, a field or a talus where two people were arguing about the ownership of it, zika v'chiv, and he declared one innocent and one liable, so now one of them has to pay the other, or timivitir, or it was a case of tumavatara, and he declared this thing tome or this thing tar, osa v'hitir, or he declared osa v'mutar, as the case may be, v'chena edim she'idu, similarly the edim who testify on such things, kulan rashoyin likach, all of them are allowed to buy the thing that they judged or testified about. Aval, and Tosfos points out, because they're two edim, we don't suspect them. If it was only one aid, then we might suspect that he bent the truth in order to be able to have an opportunity to buy this. But two edim, we don't suspect such a thing. But Aval Omer Chachamim, nevertheless, the Chachamim said, Harchik mina kir or mina doim eloi. Stay away from anything ugly and from something that even resembles something ugly. So here, there is, it sort of resembles that, because people might think that Rav Elbachana declared the animal kosher so that the guy would sell him the meat cheaply from it. So shouldn't he be careful about that? And the answer is, that would only be something when a person, when you buy something based on an evaluation, you have to estimate how much it's worth, and then you pay the appropriate point. So now, did he really pay full price or not? Here you can see by the weight, you can see how much weight he, how much weight of it he bought, and how much he paid, and you can see that it's a normal price. And he paid on the, and Rashi points out also he paid on the spot also, so there's not even that the guy might have given him credit for it or something, so therefore that demonstrates that everything was on the up and up. Tihod the Rabba, as we see an example of Rabba on the side over here, it says it should be Rava. Shara Treifta, he declared mutter something that might have been treif. Where there was a question, there was a shaila on it, whether it was treif, and he declared it kosher. V'zavan minam bisra, and he bought meat from it. Same idea. In other words, he declared it kosher, and then he bought meat to demonstrate that it's kosher. But Omrele Basra Rav Chista, but the daughter of Rav Chista, who was Rava's wife, says to him, Abash. Shari Bukhri, you should know, my father, one time, was Matir Bukhur, a Koyan would bring to him, Rav Chista himself was a Koyan, but in any case, people would bring him a Bukhur to determine whether it has a mum, because until it has a mum, nowadays, when we have no Beis Mikdash, we can't do anything with it, so they would have to wait till it develops a mum. We'll learn about it in Masechta Bukhuris in a few months, Be'ez Hashem, and therefore, so you'd need a Chacham, such as Rav Chista, to check whether this really is a mum. So she tells her husband Rava that my father, when people would bring him a bechor to check, he would declare it mutter v'loy zavan min ebisra, but he wouldn't buy meat from it because of the chashad that maybe the owner is selling him the meat cheaply. So why are you? Omer law. So the answer is Hanimila Bukhra, because the difference is when it comes to a Bukhur, da shumam is zaban, which has to be sold based on an evaluation of its value. Because when it comes to a Bukhur, we're going to learn in the next Masechta and Bukhuris that even when you're allowed to shecht it, you're not allowed to sell the meat in the usual way, in the butcher shops, and weighing it in the usual way, because it has still the kedusha of a Bukhur. So therefore, there's always the concern that maybe it was that it's going to look like maybe he sold it to him cheaply. Hocha maskala moichach, again, here the weight and the fact that I pay for it right away demonstrates that it's all on the up and up. My ikka, so Rava continues, at most, what could people possibly suspect? Mishum umtsam maliyasa, that I wanted a particular, that they gave me an extra good cut of meat. Doesn't matter. Kol yom umtsam maliyasa zavnuli. They always sell me the best cuts of meat anyway, because they always honor me by giving me the best cuts of meat. So therefore, there's not going to be any chashad over here that they did anything other than normal. Okay. So in this connection, the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Chista, Ezehu Tamad Chacham, what is the definition of a Tamad Chacham? Zeha Roya Trefa La'asmai, a person who checks a Trefa for himself. So he has a Trefa, and there's a reason that it might be also, and a reason that it might be Mutter, and he declares it Trefa, even though he suffers a big financial loss with it, then you know he's really a Tamad Chacham. What is the relevance of that? Tosfos points out, the relevance is that in Bava Metzia, the Gemara tells us that normally, of course, you need simanim. If somebody lost something and wants to claim it, he has to provide simanim. But a Tamad Chacham, we trust to return him something even with Tvias Ay. And he says, I can't give any particular simon, but I'll recognize it when I see it. So then that's valid, but how do we know? If he's a Tamad Chacham, he has to be somebody completely honest. So the Gemara mentions over there that he only bends the truth in certain things and in certain areas in order to be an honor of, and in order not to, people shouldn't think of him disrespectfully, etc. But here, Rav Chista is saying another point, when he sees a Trefa for himself and when he sees that there's a reason to declare it Trefa, and he does in fact do so, rather than trying to cut corners, then you know he's really a Tamad Chacham and that we can trust him in financial matters like that. And the Gemara continues, Dorash Mazutra Meshmeder Rav Chista. Mazutra gave a drosha in the name of Rav Chista in a similar vein. Komisha Koda Veshone, a person who reads, who learns Tanakh, and learns Mishnayas, the Roya Trefa La'asma, and again he sees a Trefa for himself and will declare it Trefa, rather than trying to cut corners. and lose a lot of money, the Shimish Tamar Chachamim, and he served Tamar Chachamim, which means to learn by them not just the actual Mishnayos and Braisos, but the reasoning behind it, and how to reconcile them, and how to do the analysis of the Gemara, which means, and it means that, but also Shimish Tamar Chachamim also means to actually serve them hand and foot, as a Talmud is supposed to do for his Rebbe. All of our Kosev Omer, I'm such a person. The Pasuk says, Yigia Kapecha Kisoichel, when you eat from the work of your own hands, Ashrecha V'tov Lach, you will be fortunate and it will be good for you. So Rashi explains, because if we see that he's not, if we see that he's not particular about his own money, that even though there might have been a reason to declare it mutter, he still goes and declares it also and suffers the loss, then never, so we can be sure that, you know what, actually, I skipped a few words over here, actually. I skipped a little bit over here. Yeah, first we said, Omer of Chista, Ezo, Tamat Chacham, Zahar, Roya, Tzrei, Vlasman. The Omer of Chista, also said, Ezo, Soinim, Atonis, Yichya. What does it mean when the Pasuk says a person who hates gifts will live, is also Zahar, Roya, Tzrei, Vlasman, also where he sees a Treifa for himself and declares it Treifa. So then we could be sure he's certainly not going to want to take gifts from other people, because if even his own money, he's not concerned about the major financial loss from having declared his animal treifa, then we can be sure that also he's not going to be in such a rush to accept gifts from other people. And the pasuk is saying that a person who doesn't accept gifts, a person who hates and turns down gifts, will live. Tosfos brings another point, and not Tosfos, Maharsha brings another point as well. Haroya treifa la'atzmei means that he doesn't have to rely on other people. He himself, so it means, in other words, he won't trust other people as far as kashrus. For example, if they invite him to a meal, he's not going to take up the invitation. So therefore, he's hating gifts, and therefore he's going to live. So now the Gemara continues. Dorash Mazutra Meshmei Derav Chista, Kol Mishu Kloda V'Shoneh, a person who learns Tanakh and learns Mishnayos, V'Roya Treifa La'atzmei, and sees a Treifa for himself and declares it Treif, V'Shimish Tamar Chachamim, and serves Tamar Chachamim, actually waits on them and serves them, but also during that time he learns from them the methodology of the Gemara, and he also learns from them Midas, Tovus, and all of that. All of our Kosev Omer, such a person, the Pasuk says, Yigia Kapech Kisoichel, when you eat from the work of your hands, Ashrecha V'Tov Lach, you will be fortunate and it will be good for you. Maharsha brings like this also another, you look at the context of the pasuk. Ashrei kol yirei Hashem, happy is all who fears Hashem, meaning he fears Hashem, and therefore he's machmir on himself because of the suffet. So now we're saying that Ashrecha v'tov lach will have a happy and fortunate place in Olam Haba. Yigia kapech kisoichel, but then when on top of that, he eats of the work of his own hands, namely he works and actually finds and truly finds a way for a heter, so then he actually enjoys both. He has Olam Hazeh, because he has the actual meat in it, and Olam Haba, where he has the goodness of Olam Haba as well. So that's Rav Zvi Amar, Zoicha v'Neichol Shnei Olamos, so he'll be Zoicha and inherit both worlds, Olam Hazeh v'Olam Haba. Because Ashrecha v'Toyv v'Olam Hazeh, but as it says in Pirkei Avos, Ashrecha v'Olam Hazeh v'Toyv Lach l'Olam Haba. So in other words, as Maharsha says, in other words, you can be, he might be machmer on himself and declare it treifa because he's not sure. That would be, that's one thing. And he gets a great schar from Hashem for the fact that he wasn't concerned about his own money. But an even greater thing would be when he's actually able to find a reason to declare it kosher and a valid reason, not just cutting corners or whatever, then he gets the best of both, Olam Hazeh, where he enjoys the actual Olam Hazeh, and Olam Haba for his correct psak halacha. So in this connection, talking about not liking gifts, the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar, yeah, and that's Maharsha says, this is the connection. So when he said, Roya Treifa La'atzmei, means he's not going to trust other people as far as matters of kashrus. So Rabbi Lazar, you have a Mashadri, Levi Ben Yosiya, when they would send food to Rabbi Lazar from the household of the Nasi, Midi, they would send him something, Loi Shokel, he wouldn't take, whether food or other gifts. V'chiyavu Mezamni Le'le Ozil, and if they invited him to eat by them, he also wouldn't go. Omar, he says, Loi Kaboi Ma'u De'eche, do you, Rebbe, the Nasi, do you not want that I live? D'chtib B'sonim Atonis Yichya. And the Pasuk says, one who hates gifts will live, so I'd rather that way. They talk about that this applies even to the gifts that he's entitled to, Al Pi Alocha. For example, Rabbi Lazar was a Koyan, he's entitled to Zroi L'chayayim V'keva. Nevertheless, it would be valid of him to turn that down. On the other hand, the Gemara continues, Reb Zera kin shadri lele shokel. Reb Zera, when they would send him a gift from the family of the Nasi, he also wouldn't accept it, but kiavu mazamni lele ozel. But if they invited him to eat by them, then he would go. Omer, because it's the kuri who the misiaku be, they are on the contrary. They're getting honor from the fact that I'm eating by them. So in other words, not they're giving me a matana, more I'm giving them a matana with my presence, and therefore that's not included in sonim matana siachya.
Don't we say that, quote,